This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. You're with Sumitra, Shoik and Sue Ann. Earlier on, before the break, we were talking about flash floods and how you should be safe and protecting yourself and not following other cars through them. And now we're going to be moving on to hot flashes.
Yes, hot flashes. Obviously, we all know that that's the major symptom and the most debilitating symptom associated with menopause. And so why are we talking about menopause? So last Friday was World Menopause Day, and in conjunction with that day, the UK's Channel 4, their broadcaster, launched their menopause policy, and it's said to be the first among UK media companies to do so. So among the benefits that Channel 4 will now offer for its female employees are access to flexible working arrangements and paid leave if they feel unwell because of the side effects of menopause. So presumably, I mean, or rather, we do know that the effects of menopause, the symptoms can strike you in a very unpredictable fashion. You don't know when it's going to come. You don't know how long it will last. You don't know how intense they will be and how much they could affect your ability to be productive at work.
And your quality of life as well, right? Which is why I think that this thing is so progressive. To be able to take some a woman's biological function, something that she cannot help, and to be able to work it into a human resource policy. Well done, Channel 4. I believe they've also now going to be setting aside private, cool and quiet workspaces for women who are going through menopause. A workplace assessment to ensure that the environment is not worsening their symptoms, and a range of support and guidance resources as well.
And in addition to that, Channel 4 will also introduce menopause awareness briefings to its leadership team, and its HR team now even has a dedicated menopause champion.
How interesting that is, right? Somebody who is there to specifically advocate for strategies or workplace measures that perhaps it could be conscious or unconsciously being overlooked by management and HR departments. But for somebody who champions it to say, hey, hang on, perhaps these kinds of activities or these kinds of, ergonomics are not friendly for women who are going through these.
And the company has that because they have an in-house gender equality staff network called For Women, which was responsible for drafting and pushing through this policy on menopause. So let's have a brief refresher on menopause here. It's actually so it's a phase of a woman's life when her periods have stopped and her levels of estrogen and progesterone have reduced drastically.
So you know, there's another stage that's significant around this time, isn't it? It's the perimenopause stage, and that's the before you actually reach menopause is the transition to that point, the transition to the point before you have your last period, right?
And perimenopause usually starts when a woman is in her mid to late 40s, and that actually can last up to 4 years before menopause finally sets in. So during that period, your hormone levels can change randomly, which will cause irregular periods, for example, longer or shorter cycles. It may even skip a few months between your cycles. You may have unusually heavy or light flow. And many women also start experiencing menopause symptoms during this transition period of perimenopause.
Those dreaded menopause symptoms. Like you mentioned earlier, Shoik, of course, there are hot flashes, which then are then associated with sleeping problems as well, right? Because hot flashes are just sudden heat in the chest, face and head. And you know, women have described that, you know, they can suddenly turn red all over, even to the point where there's blotchiness to the skin,
and it must be so hard to deal with, especially in a workplace. Imagine if you're having meetings with colleagues or clients and suddenly,
it is not a symptom that you can control. It is not something that is within any sort of, you know, power to be able to tamp down. It's going to happen. It's a biological function and you need to ride through it, right? Of course, and then there's also the sweating profusely. And because they sweat profusely, some women also get cold sweats and chills. A hot flash can happen at night, causing a drenching sweat and you won't be able to sleep, hence the sleep problems, right? Yeah. But of course, you know, the sweatiness is also something that is terribly uncomfortable in a work situation.
Yes, yeah.
Especially if it's then associated with odor as mm-hmm. well. You know, I can imagine the kind of, it's not just a physical discomfort that you go through, right? But the emotional and the mental discomfort of feeling that you just don't fit into this work environment anymore. Yeah.
And that would severely affect your self-esteem and your confidence in your ability to just feel like you can carry yourself through the day, you know?
Mm-hmm. And here's why I find Channel 4's new policy, so progressive, right? Because in the case of hot flashes, no two women experience hot flashes the same way. Mm. There isn't a one-size-fits-all solution or a pill or a sticker that you can just, you know, slap onto them to make the symptoms go away. Women who experience their first hot flashes after the last period may have their hot flashes go on for about 3.5 years.
That's long enough.
Wait. Women who have their first hot flashes before their menstrual periods end could have hot flashes for an average of 9 to 10 years.
Oh. Wow, that's
some
long.
Women even face hot flashes for up to 14 years
that's
after menopause.
Significant. Yeah, that's a significant. And so you're right for Channel 4 to say we accept that this could be, we can't dictate the terms of your menopausal symptoms. So we are allowing you to have that flexibility in terms of working arrangements, shift works and things like that.
And especially when you look at the age group as well, right? I mean, if you're talking about women in their 40s, 50s who are experiencing these symptoms, as far as I'm concerned, as a 40-odd-year-old woman, you're still in the prime of your working life.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and why should these symptoms impact the quality of your life so badly that you feel that perhaps you can't go on working?
You know, and I've read stories of women who've even had to stop working because of these symptoms. And you think
not unheard of.
Yeah, and you think that this is something reserved for, I don't know, serious chronic diseases. But no, this is menopause, something every woman will go through.
Exactly.
Yeah, and of course, there are other symptoms that you hear about it, which are not insignificant as well. Mm-hmm. Vaginal dryness, which can be very, very a huge impairment in a woman's personal life, right? It causes itching, burning, pain, discomfort, and all that, especially during sexual intercourse. Yep. It can make sex very, very painful. Mm-hmm. There's the psychological symptoms, which is, I think, something a lot of people make fun of women for. When you talk about mood swings, irritability, crying episodes, increased risk for anxiety and depression. And it's one of those aspects of menopause that other people would downplay, or, you know, like how women are made fun of for having PMS.
Yes.
In the same way, it's never given its due consideration.
No, I completely agree. I believe we're going to keep coming back to this point over and over again, right? It's a biological function that nearly every woman is going to have to go through. Mm. Why are we not putting it out on the table to discuss it?
And in addition to all that, there's also further health effects that are perhaps not always discussed as well. We have decreased hormone levels lead to loss in bone density, which then increases your risk of osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. And then having changing estrogen levels can also raise cholesterol levels and then increase your risk for heart disease and stroke as well.
Yeah, so with all these symptoms and complications, it's no wonder some women are terrified of this phase of life. And the thing is, though, do we need to be so fearful of it if it's just a natural biological phenomenon? So here's a clip from a previous interview that we did on Health and Living with consultant obstetrician and gynecologist Dr. Pramitha Damodaran. She was talking about a lot of beliefs and taboos around menopause. And her sort of overarching message was, don't be afraid of it. Let's have a listen to that clip.
We're all going to go through it. And being fearful of it, you know, does not, you know, it's not going to, you know, get you anywhere at all. It's just a phase. Primary school, secondary school, you know, tertiary. It's just one of those phases that all of us have to go through. I think it's also society, because society has made it seem that we shouldn't grow old. And if we grow old, we would look wrinkly and sad and stooped and fat, and you know, so you know, we get this picture that everything is going to drop in the wrong direction, and that makes us all so scared.
So that's very true, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That we see that phase as everything, sort of our fertility and our reason for being. Yeah, our womanhood, our femininity ending. But that's not true. Mm-hmm. And it's these kinds of beliefs and taboos about menopause that are hindering women from talking about how it affects them at work as well.
Right.
And if you think about it, if a woman begins experiencing perimenopause from that average age of mid-40s onwards, mm-hmm. and, you know, bear in mind some women have premature menopause, mm-hmm. which could start in her early 40s, mm-hmm. She will be spending at least 15 years of her productive working career trying to deal with these symptoms and health effects of menopause.
Yep.
So for a HR perspective, I spoke to Deepa George. She's a HR consultant to look at, to get her thoughts first on how, what she thinks about workplace policies that specifically address menopause.
Okay. So I think personally, from a Malaysia or Asian perspective, I think we're a long way away. However, I think what would be good is if there's a recognition, just like for the younger employees, where dysmenorrhea is quite recognized as part of your medical leave entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think menopause is not something people will talk about. For some reason, there's still a lot of, confidentiality, not to say shame, but in a way, because it's age associated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of the challenges. But back to your point, if you can think about the factors that affect a woman who is, you know, whether it's premenopausal or menopausal, then definitely things like the heat, you know, the comfort in terms of whether headaches or cold sweats and so on. So if you remove those hindrances at the workplace by providing a more private, cool environment, then you still get a very productive employee. All you're doing is taking out all the barriers to them being productive. So I definitely think, you know, something like a cool setting, an option for a private area. Now, the good news is I think today there are already some natural environmental or facility options that allow that. So mm-hmm. you have areas where you have decentralized air conditioning. So, you know, some companies could easily set aside to say that, you know, that can be a working space for that.
Mm-hmm.
So decentralized air conditioning, hot desk, and then meeting rooms separately for private areas. So again, all these by default hopefully can help that office facility part.
Mm-hmm.
Now on the leave and so on, I think the question will be, will the employee and then the supervisors in the company be willing to accept that I'm having these hot flushes, I need the day off as mm-hmm. a valid option for a medical leave? That mm-hmm. hasn't happened yet, at least in my experience. So if we can get to that and recognize that it is an actual condition that's affecting you physiologically, then we are making headway. So two things. One is the facility options, I think, immediately. Secondly, is recognizing that it is a real condition physically affecting you and can be debilitating for some when you're really uncomfortable. So if you can do those two, I think that would be some quick wins we can look at.
How do you ensure, though, that it's not just management paying lip service and saying, oh, we recognize, and, you know, how does it translate into acceptance that women, certain women will face certain issues that they should not be penalized for?
Yeah. So I think bottom line, if you're talking about a corporation, it comes to the fact that the reality, hard truth is it's performance driven, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if the results still are able to be delivered and all you're doing is take away the barriers to it, like I said, creating that workspace that's comfortable, then the performance or the outcome should be the one that matters. Now, the female employee should also realize, just like, you know, if we are not producing as much, whatever it may be, either the goals have to be normalized to meet our health requirements, or we need to understand that we have to rise above that. So on the days when we're not having those moments, we have to work a little bit more we can't be expected to be treated exactly the same for the output that's not the same amount as other colleagues. That's the only thing I would put as a condition.
Mm.
If that is the case, so the first thing I would say is performance. You know, it's like people who are on maternity leave. I frown upon companies that actually give lesser sort of rewards because they were not there. But unless their work actually got distributed to others, a lot of the time they're still meeting the expectations of the company.
Mm.
It's just a natural progression of life, right, to go on maternity leave. So it's not fair to penalize them for that.
Mm.
So similarly for a company, as long as you are not penalizing the employee for the number of medical leave they've taken or the, you know, output being according to measurement, but because you had 5 days medical for menopausal things, then you get less incentive or bonus. So there has to be that linkage, which means everything else held constant, it's still performance-oriented and delivery-oriented.
Mm. How do we avoid a situation where a company could abuse that and perhaps use it as then an excuse to not hire as many women, to let go of female staff as they reach a certain age, perhaps? Would you see that potentially happening?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to say that we do have, I won't even say unconscious bias. We are at a stage where we still allow conscious bias in some organizations who say that I don't want, you know, women for this, or I don't want younger women. They might go on maternity. I don't want older women because they're not as energetic. That to say, we still see that happening. I wish I had the answer for that. I don't. But I think this is where there needs to be a sort of tone at the top. So if the CEO himself or herself, you know, be it male or female, believes that people can contribute no matter what, there's no ageism, there's no gender bias or anything, it's just about the productivity of the individual in terms of their competency. So first thing to start is the tone at the top. Secondly is for people to speak out against it. So whether it's an individual or whether it's peer, so this is where I think peer empathy will come in a lot. Mm-hmm. So if people see that someone is unfairly judged, I mean, it's not a secret. You can see how people perform. Everyone knows who's good employees, who's better employees, and so on. And if they feel that somebody's unfairly judged, hopefully somebody's willing to speak up as well, because it's not sort of detrimental to them. It's sort of, you know, that level. So if the employee tone at the top, employee themselves to call it out if that's the tone that's set, and then hopefully some level of peer group sort of empathy or sympathy that, you know, sort of rallying around that support system, because everyone will be in that boat someday if you're a woman.
And finally, you know, some detractors may argue that this is some form of, you know, reverse discrimination, or it can be abused. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, well, women amusing, again, that also works on the other way, right? Which means you still have to show me the money or show me the performance, show me the results.
Mm.
That's why I'm saying, so if we know we are hired, you know, and you're not makan gaji buta, right? You're hired to perform a certain job. So as long as you meet those deliverables and whatever hindrances along the way you can overcome, then that should be the first measure of success. Then it can be about differentiating the performance, like who did more, who had more initiative. Baseline should be just about you need to meet the expectations of the organization. And then if people want to abuse it, now if it is just like medical leave, if people try to play the, you know, to game the system,
mm-hmm.
we also send employees for medical checkup to validate it's out of concern, mm-hmm. but also a validation of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
So on the same token, you know, we have people, and this is especially true for some women who might be menopausal, you know, earlier than later and so on. So some people might think, how can this 43-year-old be, or 45-year-old be going through menopause when the average age is, I don't know, 48 to 53 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So then you need to get that doctor's validation, hopefully to help as well. I think that's possible, you know, stopgap measure at the moment.
So that was Deepa George, HR consultant, weighing in on why it's important to recognise menopause in workplace policies.
Mm. So let's take a look at some quantitative measurements of how menopause affects women in the workplace. Right. Mm. So earlier we talked about all the symptoms. And now in the UK, there's a survey of more than 1,100 women, which was undertaken by the Menopause Clinic, News and Health. And published in July, they found that 94% said they felt their work had suffered as a result of their menopause symptoms. And 53% said their colleagues had noticed a deterioration in their performance as well.
That's big numbers, yeah.
Yeah, and just over half of those women surveyed had taken time off sick, and 1 in 10 had missed more than 8 weeks of work.
Mm. Wow. A separate survey by the UK Shop Workers Union, USDAO, found that 1 in 5 women had taken time off work, and that more than half did not feel able to approach their managers if they were suffering. That's sad.
Yeah, so that last point is interesting, isn't it? Whether you feel that you can talk to your manager, perhaps your immediate supervisor or your HR person, to have that chat about, look, I'm going through this period, no pun intended, I'm going through this phase rather, and how can I work with the company to ensure that my work won't suffer,
right.
You know, that I can still contribute, but that I won't be penalized for constantly taking what people may see as, you know, MCs or sick days, right?
But it's really MCs or sick days to address a condition that and I don't want to sound callous about it, that has no cure. It's something that you just need to ride out. It will come to an end at some point, but it's part and parcel of being able to, well, it's part and parcel of being a woman for a lot of people.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, you know, perhaps for BFM, we are a very open workplace. We are very accepting of diverse experiences, but this would not be the same for many other work environments. I'm just thinking how difficult it must be for women who work in male-dominated environments or industries, or those who have perhaps feel embarrassed to talk about it with their direct supervisors if their direct supervisor was a man.
Yeah, because you know what the prevalent sort of rhetoric is going to be, right? Well, if every single woman goes through this uncomplainingly, quietly, why can't you too?
But that doesn't mean that that is the right way to think about it, because it was accepted as the norm because women did not want to come out, could not come out to complain about it. But now that there are women who are taking charge and making sure that they do have menopausal symptoms that are very serious and can affect their work, that it's quite difficult for them to make that change, but they are trying to introduce changes in their workplace.
We've got a long way to go, though. I mean, we don't even have our anti-discrimination policies in place yet. So what is stopping an employer to fire a woman for, you know, lack of performance because she's been taking a little bit of extra time off because she's going through menopause?
Yeah, and that's exactly what Deepa pointed out, right? And, and she was very pragmatic and realistic in saying that, yep, that's going to be a reality for many organizations. And I'm just wondering, do you have any thoughts on how female employees could effectively change policy? Do you think we have a voice?
Of course we do, but there needs to be more of us at the table in order to have that voice, right? And I think more of us have to be willing and able to talk about issues like, for example, putting in place a menopause policy, even if you think that it's going to be to your detriment. Because that's the only way we move forward with progress, right? Even if your bosses are going to get angry with you, even if you lose your job for bringing it up, for example, somebody has to be willing to speak up about it to say that, no, this is wrong.
So you're talking about sort of almost throwing yourself on a sword for...
Do you think that's what it is? I don't think that's what activism is. I think activism is the willingness to make yourself uncomfortable for the greater good. And if the greater good is so that women 10 years down the line don't have to suffer the humiliation and just the sheer embarrassment of having to go through a natural biological function and be at the mercy of their colleagues, then go ahead. By all means, I would say do it.
So in the first place, as a woman or as women in society, we have to fight through those cultural taboos as well.
We have been for a long, long time.
Yeah. To get over that sense of embarrassment or shame about reaching this point of your life and that it means you are not the same woman that you used to be. That's not true.
Yeah, and I think the shift maybe comes about, well, you've perhaps seen a little bit of the shift maybe when it comes to the attitudes towards pregnant women in the workplace, for example. I think perhaps these days it's less acceptable. I would hope that it's less acceptable if a co-worker who was pregnant, you know, got up in the middle of the afternoon and said, you know what, I'm really, really not feeling too good today. I'm done with my work and I'm going to go home. I would hope that we're closer at a stage where people would say, yeah, of course, head on home. It's fine. Put your feet up. Work has been done. We're good. But we need that sort of equality to be able to spill across to other things. You know, we need for women co-workers not to be ashamed of saying, I have my period today and I'm not feeling too good. Can you guys cover for me?
Yeah.
Even that's important.
Well, many of us shy away at even saying I have my period, saying the word even, you know, that there's still that. Again, it comes back to the cultural taboos, right?
And I'm wondering if social media can be an interesting platform for women to talk more about things like menstruation, their menopause. And interestingly, someone WhatsApped in to say that there is a petition on change.org, which is calling on UK ministers to make to make menopause matter. So in areas, for example, like better training for GPs, workplace support, age-appropriate education for students. Mm. And that's a petition that that I think more than 80,000 over people have signed. Mm-hmm. And I think that shows an interesting aspect of how social media can be used for people to just break all these uncomfortable barriers and just talk about it more. And hopefully that conversation that happens on social media will then shift towards in the workplace as well.
Mm. I agree. And, you know, we're moving towards, I mean, the government's already acknowledged that we're moving towards an aging society, right?
Yes.
So if we're going to be moving towards an aging society and we're going to have more older women in the workforce, we better start making a niche, a sort of an area for them, right? Yeah. We do have a show coming up on menopause, right?
Yes.
So next Thursday, that's 31st October, on Health and Living at 4 p.m, we will be talking to obstetrician and gynecologist Dr. Pramitha Damodaran, who you heard earlier from a clip, but she will be talking about menopause hormone therapy and some recent news reports that linked HRT to a higher risk of breast cancer. So we'll be asking her if this is true or whether it just has been blown out of proportion. So Dr. Pramitha will help us put all of this into perspective.
Okay. Oh God, look at us nattering away. It's almost 10 to the hour. Okay, so that's all the time we have for today's show. Please do look us up on Facebook. We're at BFM The Bigger Picture to drop us a message. If you missed any part of this show, download the podcast bfm.my at the Daily Digest or on the BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m, join Sharmila Ganesan, who chats with Jaffa Ismail and the Badan Warisan Malaysia President Elizabeth Cardosa about the ongoing exhibition of artwork by the late Ismail Zain. This has been the Daily Digest on BFM 89.9. We are leaving you with Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves by Aretha Franklin and the Eurythmics.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.